I'm Charles Breton.
I'm Helena Epstein.
And I'm Chris Henson. Together we are
a Jew
and
a Gentile walking to
a bar
mitzvah.
Well, buckle in, folks. Welcome to the podcast where you'll find theology, cigars, whiskey, and F-bombs. This is the 115th episode, and we're all here tonight. So the Gentiles here, the Jews here, and the ampersand of reason.
She's back.
I'm back. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as always, a reminder, our podcast is now available on Stitcher, on iTunes. You can also hear us on Theology Corner at theologycorner.net. And that we are part of the Wild Goose Goosecast Network, a network of faith-based podcasts discussing issues of inclusion and social justice. To learn more about the Wild Goose Festival, go to wildgoosefestival.org.
Which they have rescheduled.
The Wild Goose will be next year.
Yes, it will.
What is it, like the 15th through 18th or something?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Of July. Yes, not just the 15th and 18th of every month, but specifically of July. Although every month would be interesting. I think that would start to wear thin after a while.
Yeah, I was thinking.
Not camping in January.
Yeah. Well, see, that's what I did growing up because I lived in Florida, and you didn't camp in July.
Right.
Yeah, you camped in December, January, and February.
But you're also from a state cool that has crime.
And no mosquitoes. So.
Yeah, but it's in a state that has crime that doesn't exist anywhere else in the fucking world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Florida only, man. Florida man. I'm sorry. I discovered Reddit this month.
You just discovered Reddit, man?
No, I knew Reddit was on there.
He's just finding all the subreddits just now.
Went on a deep dive.
Yeah, because it's just amuses the hell out of me. Because there's only so much. I've watched everything on Netflix. I started Castlevania. I'm like the last 5 minutes of the third season, last episode. It kicks ass. I tried Avatar, but I just realized that I'm 43 years old. Japanime ended for me at Akira. Pretty much.
Dude, I love that show, and I just saw it for the first time last year.
But you're a Pokemon generation. I mean,
I am not Pokemon generation. I'm
we
not
had
that
Voltron
young.
And Ultraman if you had TV out of Charlotte.
And Gundam.
Now, Gundam, I didn't have Gundam where I lived at.
Oh.
Or if we did, we didn't call it that.
Okay.
Have you watched Turn yet? Have you really watched everything on Netflix, or am I about to have to be mad at you?
You ain't mad at me. I haven't watched Turn yet.
God damn it. Then you haven't watched everything on Netflix.
Yeah.
Well, no, that clearly was hyperbole.
Well, I'm still going to call you out on it.
Oh.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. Well, do you need any? Well, you don't need any Men of the Beard oil now. So
nope.
We're still going to mention them because I do.
Well, he might because apparently he thinks I could use it. So yeah, Chris could still need it.
We need to revisit the personal lubricant conversation again.
You know, there's a Craigslist for that.
There's
and a subreddit. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, this is interesting. In Australia, a guy advertised on Facebook for two men to fulfill his fantasy of being handcuffed in his underwear. So they broke into the house, handcuffed the man in his underwear, and did all the things this guy wanted. Turned out it was the wrong house.
No.
Yeah.
That's bad.
Is this in you said it's in Australia.
Australia.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is the Florida of the rest of the world, I think.
Yeah.
Where all the fauna and flora can kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We just lost any listeners in Australia.
I don't think we've had that many. We're getting a lot from China for the past couple of weeks. So I guess fucking lockdown
bots.
There.
Bots.
Yeah. Anyway. But still drinking lots of
virgin
cane.
Why would Chinese bots even be listening to us? That doesn't even make sense.
Yeah. I think it's that, they're on lockdown also. So.
Right.
Or do you have to be that? That we're what you're listening to.
Exactly.
I mean, the last good podcast I listened to, and I know y'all, well, I know Charles played Red, I don't know if Helena's listened to it, Byron's last episode of The Public Morality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the guest was
the
horrible.
The book is out.
The guest was a little
well,
lame.
Yeah, but he had a good guest host.
It was Byron. He was a good guest host. Yeah, the new book's out on the
Declaration
of Independence.
Mm-hmm.
If it's as good as his other books, I'm definitely going to be ordering it.
We'll have to invite him back.
Ooh, I've never podcasted with Byron. That would be fun.
Yeah.
It's a lot like podcasting with us, except nobody needs a microphone or to send him a Zoom link. He just opens a window and talks. Mm-hmm.
And we can record it.
Yeah. We love Byron, though. He's an excellent writer.
Wonderful.
Intellectual minister of sorts. Professor.
Self-defrocked. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So let's finish up with our sponsors quickly then.
Let's do.
Virgil Caine Rye Whiskey, the official rye of our podcast. One of the few businesses responsibly reacting to the gentle reopening of our state, Four Saints Brewing Company. They have decided that they are still going to be takeout orders only and haven't opened the tap room yet to guests.
Because killing your customer base is not a good business model.
Surprisingly not. Yeah. Topleaf Cigar Lounge, the premier lounge in Winston-Salem.
Open for business.
Mm-hmm. A 50% occupancy, one person at a time in the humidor.
Yeah, Charles hooked us up Sunday.
Yep.
Brought back a wise man. Was it its foundation? No.
Mm-hmm. No, it was the Maduro one. Yes, foundation.
It was quite good. Mm-hmm. As we watched my wife and Helena with her Scottish peasant stock muscle. my wife has now reduced the 72 bags of concrete. I think we're down to an even 60, and it's all on one pallet.
Mm-hmm. A good workout for the day.
It was something.
Well, pretty soon she can open an Etsy store like Natalie has on Imagine That.
Ooh, nice segue. I was going to say
that. Segue.
Just say that Bethany's probably got some more AJ Fernandez grab bags available. Yeah. That was a nice deal. What, $50?
Yeah.
Like five cigars. It's AJ, so it's top notch.
Two of more Figurados. Oh, yeah, it was very good. In fact, that's what I'm smoking.
I'm smoking an AJ right now.
What are you, okay, you're smoking an AJ right now.
No, it was finished. We got to plug Natalie. Let's plug Natalie.
Yeah, I mean, he's saying
let's
right
plug Natalie
for that too.
Make sure that we properly plug
careful how
Natalie.
You say that. Her husband listens to the podcast.
No, he doesn't.
How do you know?
Because he's got taste. He's married to Natalie.
That's true.
See how
that's
I saved true. That one? See how
Ooh,
I saved that?
That's good. That's good.
So, yeah, imagine
Imagine Nats. Yeah. So, speaking of which, I got accused of hitting on Rabbi Esther Hugenholtz. Remember Rabbi Esther? She did the theology of Star Wars with us.
Again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This keeps happening.
I know. Yeah. So she was Lee made scones and clotted cream for us to have. Nice English tea. So
Well, it went with the weather lately in North Carolina.
Right. So she had posted at the same time a service from England where you can get a box of all the ingredients to do an actual English tea. And I said, my son just made scones and clotted cream. She goes, oh, that sounds great. I said, yes, we're going to be having tea with Daf Yomi, which is the daily reading of one page of Talmud a day that Gail and Lee and I are doing. And she responded, T and Daf Yomi, are you hitting on me?
Is that like a total Jewish pickup line?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's really, yeah. Yes. That's
I have to ask.
It
that's
is.
That's a super nerdy Jewish pickup line, dude. That's
super not, nerdy but, Jewish pickup
yeah,
line. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not, that wouldn't work on your standard.
No.
I don't see my wife getting all excited going like, you had me at Daf Yomi. She'd be like, what the fuck's a Daf Yomi?
It's a page a day.
Page a day.
Yeah, it only takes 7.5 years to finish the entire Talmud if you'd only read one page a day. And it's really vital stuff. Did you not see, I posted that if you had studied Talmud when you were at Duke Div.
Yeah, I saw that, the whole gas rag.
Yeah, you could have avoided the whole gas rag.
Let's be fair, I've studied Talmud at Duke and still done that.
No, they could not if you had studied Talmud, because then you would have known that the rabbis say that one who wipes with something flammable, his lower teeth, which hold in the intestines, will collapse. And your lower teeth is your sphincter.
Yeah, I gathered that much from the post.
Yeah. So, had you learned Talmud,
You would have known not to wipe your ass with the gas rag.
Not to pick up that gas rag because it was flammable.
That's okay. Charles also did the COVID chain mail.
What?
Charles COVID chain mailed me on a chain mail, whatever the hell that thing is, where you tag somebody like an asshole to do something for 10 days. Yeah. It's like, you know, posting. Oh, yeah. Don't worry. I tagged you today, Elena.
And you will get
tagged
also.
I did it this afternoon because I'm like, oh, if I'm going to be miserable with this shit, might as well take more people down with me.
Exactly.
I think I did summer. I haven't done Helena yet.
No, you did summer.
Okay. But I did Pearl Jam.
I'll be doing Helena later.
I did Pearl Jam.
That's almost as bad as you saying, let's plug Natalie.
Hey,
let's
she's my Natalie. Surrogate. What are we now? It's not work wife, but you're sort of married wild she's goose style to my wife. Current wife.
Right.
Some kind of polyamorous.
Which does it, relationship.
Well, but if she's married to Summer, I don't think that makes her any relation to you.
No,
thank God. That would be up to Summer whether or not she's willing to share. And from what I've seen, I don't think that's happening.
She's a selfish woman.
Isn't that actually up to me? But that's a whole other thing.
No, you have no say in this.
I'm owned by Summer.
Yes, I'm going to mansplain. Let me explain to you how misogyny works, okay?
Let me explain. God, if he's in for an ounce, he's in for a pound.
My favorite thing that you guys do. Yeah.
Yes. Oh.
What the fuck were we
talking about? Chris, what are you smoking?
Now that's a segue.
We were talking about you plugging Natalie, and we were trying to get off that topic.
The album covers. No, I went soft on the opening with Pearl Jam's 10, which for Gen Xers, you know, it's kind of a good start.
Yeah.
And that leaves me four other Rage Against the Machine albums, so I got the next 4 days covered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it's going to be a fight between probably Metallica, Pantera, maybe a little Guns N' Roses. I don't know.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Well, I nominated I nominated a good friend from high school, and I gave him the challenge that I have self-imposed on myself. That's redundant. That I self-imposed that he can only post one Beatles album.
Yeah, I asked Sophie what her choice was, and she couldn't come up with 10 albums, but she said Abbey Road.
Ooh.
Nice.
I put Rubber Soul, but Abbey Road was my second choice.
She's had quite a week the last couple.
Yeah,
well, 2 weeks. She got into Salem Academy with some scholarship. She's still got a long way to go to see if we actually take the offer. And she got a character award from the entire Davie school system.
Oh, nice. So that was for her.
Of course, her reaction was, "Meh." She is her father's child.
Well, she's also an old Jewish man. Meh.
She's an old Jewish man. Like she said, we were playing Trivial Pursuit last night, and my wife was losing really bad, which is unlike her. And at some point, you know, when Summer was haggling and arguing over answer to a question, my daughter says, without provocation or prompting, "Oy vey." Just looked across the table.
Am I banned from the house now?
No.
Oh, okay.
So if I ban you, then Gail doesn't come around, and it's a lose-lose.
True. And Lee's home and he won't cook you anything.
That is quite important.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, he made homemade scones and he made homemade clotted cream.
Dude, I made homemade scones 2 weeks ago. They were awesome.
Oh, cool.
They were so good.
Cool. You guys will have to come and do a bake-off.
Oh, yeah.
So are you finally ready to answer the question, what are you smoking, Chris?
I've smoked a couple things this afternoon.
Okay.
I'm down to the filler. Mm-hmm. I guess for those, you know, the stuff you keep at the bottom of the humidor. And I've discovered some gems down there. I have restocked it. I got a great deal for the weekend special at Cigars Insider, International, sorry, I was just saying Insider. I got a 35 cigar pack for like $100, and they're all Oliva. Nice. Like, a lot of Melanios, the Series V and all that. It was a really, like, I had to check twice to make sure I'd done the math correctly. So, so I'm waiting on that. It'll probably be here sometime right after the vaccine for the coronavirus arrives. It's sometime 2021. I had the Don Lino Africa this afternoon.
Ooh, isn't that
very
nice?
Good little cigar. I knew it was an AJ product, but when I read up and then it was also Nestor Miranda, I was a little surprised because I'm not really a big Miami Cigar Company fan that I'm aware of. I mean, I've had some Nestor's other products, and you know, wasn't bad. And I'm currently smoking the La Perla Habana 1515, which was one of my last big cigar international purchases. Got a big pack of Robustos, and it's really exceptionally good. I've kept passing it over for other cigars, and I'm like, you know what? Let's take the dive, and it's really good. Yeah, let me review the damn thing. I was going to do the AJ or the Don Lino, but I think we've reviewed that one before, haven't we?
I think so.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's let me call it up now because I haven't really looked at this one yet. It's Ecuadorian Habana wrapper, Ecuadorian Sumatra wrapper as well, Cuban seed Nicaraguan long fillers from Estela Condega and Jalapa. And I don't see what the binder is. I think it's obviously got one. I can't seem to find it. But very smooth flavor to it, and it's, you know, kind of a little peppery, a little earthy because it is Nicaraguan. But I think the real note on it that I'm surprised and I keep pulling out of my mouth going, did I taste that right? It's got a berry flavor to it. Mm-hmm. It's very subtle, but it's a sweetness with a tartness to it. So it really surprisingly good little cigar. You know, I think retails for, no, it's under, I think it's $6-$7. Mm-hmm. It's not an expensive stick. Really glad I went ahead and pulled the trigger on that box.
Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah.
Well, Helena, I know you had the Bishop's Blend over the weekend.
I did. It was a really good cigar. You guys were not wrong. You know, I have to Google what the cigar is made of, but it was Pennsylvania Nicaraguan filler with an Ecuadorian Habano binder and wrapper. This is saying it's peppery spice, earth, dark chocolate, and licorice. I actually didn't get licorice, which I'm bummed about because licorice is one of my favorite flavors. But definitely spicy, definitely very chocolatey, very rich. Go good with a cup of espresso, honestly. Really delicious cigar. Sweet honey finish. There wasn't anything sweet about it. I guess that's the part, like the anise flavor that I was missing. There wasn't anything sweet about it to me particularly. But it did have a really nice finish, and it was a smooth smoke. It's very good.
Well, I've got the AJ Fernandez New World Puro Especial. And this is one that, again, he did with his father. Came out in 2017. The company lists the wrapper as a Nicaraguan Habano, but there is rumor in the industry that it's actually a Criollo 98. We'll see. Jalapa binder and filler, all Nicaraguan, from Otempe, Condega, Estela Finca, Lajeros, cedar, earth, espresso, bococo, very earthy, cedary flavor, that sweet. That kind of came and went. And just enough pepper that kind of filled out the profile. Not a lot of change up, but a lot of complexity in each pull of the cigar. So I was quite happy with it. I've enjoyed all the various things that he's done with that New World. So definitely recommend that from
Was AJ. That a top leaf purchase?
And that was one of the ones that was in the top leaf grab bag that
so.
I got. Yep.
I thought so.
Yep. Speaking of top leaf, want to throw in a quick commercial break, Chris, and then we'll come back and get into our main discussion.
Sounds good.
Four Saints Brewing Company. Four Saints pays homage to the patron saints of beer, St. Wenceslas, St. Nicholas, St. Luke, and St. Augustine of Hippo. They've become the most recognized patron saints for brewing and beer because of their contributions to and associations with the world's favorite sudsy beverage. Four Saints founders Joel McCloskey and Andrew Deming are carrying on the brewing tradition in hopes of future sainthood, or at least to make some really good beer. Four Saints Brewing Company, Asheboro, North Carolina. Well, we're back.
I think we are.
We are? Are we? Are we back? We're back.
I think we're back.
Okay, I think we're back. Well, as our listener well knows, it's been an interesting time. It's been a lot of social isolation, social distancing, Zoom meetings, and the like, routines being disrupted. And we've had a few discussions on that subject that have been, quote, more technical about things with various guests. But we also thought that this would be a good time to do something that we just do regularly with each other. Just do a mental health check-in. You know, things are starting to open back up. So just wanted to.
And it is Mental Health Awareness Month.
And it is Mental Health Awareness Month.
I feel like us missing that is.
It's a bit of an unforgivable sin in a way.
Before May is over, right?
Yeah. So just sort of checking in with each other. Chris, how have you been doing?
Been good. Our company's been really good about having some of its grief care folks who are carrying a lighter census right now and not doing any in-person, like, you know, therapy visits. Kind of calling and checking in, and I've got a good one that's very, very realistic. He's not out to save me every time he calls or anything. Just kind of a check-in. That's been really helpful. But I think the weather more than anything else.
That's really
nice. Yeah. The weather more than anything else is what's got my mood sort of down because I can't get outside or just, you know, not look out the window and it just be a, you know, fucking monsoon. And hey, you know, Monday, hurricane season starts, so there's that to look forward to.
Hell yeah, here it's going to be a doozy.
Yeah, even though we've already had our first two named storms of the season.
But maybe the things are turning because Twitter has finally decided to fact check the orange beast that sits on seven hills or whatever, how many hills it is in Revelation. I thought that made me laugh. Not going to lie. But mentally speaking of mental. No, I mean, I'm in a good place right now. And, I think it's part of folks that know us, know this podcast. One of the things we do, even when we're not recording, is do these kind of check-ins. Because it's just important, and especially important when we don't have that daily routine of, well, we still have a daily routine, especially Helena. She's still working outside the home. Yeah, it's helpful. It's a good practice.
Oh, all right, Charles, how have you been doing?
I've been doing surprisingly well as well. In many ways, I'm living my best life because I don't have to go anywhere. And the maximum number of people I can interact with is met and never exceeded. And that maximum number is one. So I never have to deal with more than one person. So I have a lot more energy, which is nice. So the best part is, again, having a spouse that understands you. So, you know, the depression hits people differently, particularly when it comes to sleep patterns. Some people can't sleep when they're depressed. They get insomnia. I'm the opposite. All I want to do is sleep. So there's those days where I just want to sleep all day long. And fortunately, Gail understands that. So she has given me permission to give myself permission on those days to just sleep all day long. I've done it a couple of times. And, you know, because I've been able to do that, that's certainly headed off some deeper troughs that would have appeared had I not done that and tried to short circuit. No, I'm going to stay up. It's only 11:30. I'm not going back to bed. So that's helped a lot. So I haven't really been as affected as a lot of people have been, or as much as I could have been through this. I've been very, very fortunate. And I absolutely, you know, acknowledge the privilege that I have someplace I can work from home and stay at home and have a lot of groceries and food, and, you know, it's a safe environment of a loving spouse. I know there's a lot of people who don't have those things. So that's kept me, you know, pretty stable. Let's check in with Reverend Honeybear, the ampersand of reason, Helena, because we know that in a recent episode, you shared that you finally have the official bipolar diagnosis. So,
did I say that on the episode? I don't remember.
Yeah, no. Further back, you were discussing it, but that was before all of this happened. So, I mean, you were just dealing with that, and we get all this shit,
right?
And
well,
and some other things. So, you know, how are you doing with all of this stuff?
So, I guess we mentioned it on the podcast, but we didn't really talk about it. So we can talk about a couple things if we want to. I accepted a diagnosis of bipolar is probably the better way to phrase it this November. Denial's a very real and very tricky thing. And I'm type 2 bipolar, so my depression's pretty significantly more pronounced than my hypomanic periods tend to be. So the only time I've ever gone for psychiatric help is for depressive episodes. And it just, I was very evasive about my symptoms because bipolar's got a pretty strong stigma attached to it. And I didn't want it. But if I'm being super honest, I had a psychiatrist try to put me on Lamictal when I was 22. So it's 13 years later before I was okay with that. It was pretty rough for a month or two while I was getting sorted out on the right mood stabilizer. And luckily the first one they tried seems to be working really well. I know that it may have to be adjusted over the years, but for now, all I've got to say is thank fucking God for Lamictal, man. Like, this last 2 months has been hard, I think, for everybody in terms of the emotional and social ramifications of isolation. I do live alone. I was given the opportunity about 6 weeks ago to work outside of the house again, doing a special project. And I took it because it's the only way that I get interaction with people on a daily basis. And I really, as much as I like to come home and be by myself, I do need that downtime. I also don't see anybody else if I don't leave the house. So I'm actually doing well. I've said a few times now, I think, that if this all had been going down without that mood stabilizer piece on board, I think I'd be in a lot more fragile of an emotional state than I am right now. It's interesting. Again, I know Chris and Charles have talked at length about depression, and I've chimed in on that because I have experienced depressive episodes, but the difference in terms of medication management, I can say like wholeheartedly that I had no idea that feelings worked the way that they're working right now. Even when I'm well, like in a good space, unmedicated, when I have feelings, I got to do something about those feelings like immediately. And if I'm not well, it gets way more intense. And the way things are right now, and I really do attribute it to being on the appropriate medication, I have a full range of feelings, but I'm not reactive to them. And I think that's been really important for me over the last 2.5 months because things have been really intense. And, you know, I've got Chris and Charles. We check in frequently, like we said. I've got some other people in my life who I check in frequently with. And it's really, all things considered, doing really well.
I always felt like when I got my diagnosis, I actually felt it was liberating, but I also know that, you know, sort of the depression is very different from bipolar. I guess, when, you know, you're not going to be surprised I asked this, but what are some of the ways that, like, people who are, you know, care for people that are bipolar in the sense of just friends, family, are there like certain touchstones, but like, these are good practices that may differ from someone that, like, say, if you're not somebody that's just, you know, sort of a boring unipolar depressive or whatever.
Unipolar. That's a really good question. I've been thinking about that some. In some ways, so, you know, like I said, I'm type 2. So my manic episodes generally fall into the category of what's known as hypomanic, which means, you know, we don't do the staying up for days and days on end. Don't get straight up grandiose. We may end up with an inflated sense of self-confidence, more energetic, more kind of bright-eyed and bushy-tailed is the way I phrase it. So it can be really hard to identify, right? Because also people with unipolar depression, depending on how episodic it is, don't always have kind of consistent low periods, right? So how high somebody gets is really subjective. For me, probably some of the biggest indicators, and it's similar to someone with depression, but if I'm not sleeping well, I go through before. So this last episode got really out of hand because of a really strong reaction I had to SSRIs. I tried to go back on the medications I'd been prescribed for depression about 2 years prior, you know, either because of age or whatever. You know, I'm older and bipolar tends to get worse with age. I reacted really badly and actually did have kind of a full-blown manic episode where I didn't sleep for more than 3 hours a night, and that wasn't consecutive hours, for about 23 days. I was really sick. But even before then, I'll go through periods maybe once or twice a year where I just don't sleep for sometimes like a week at a stretch. But it's not like energizing. Some people with type 1 bipolar, it gets really energizing for, like, they don't feel tired. I feel tired. I just straight up can't sleep. So for me, like, for people checking in with me, that's a big deal. Like, if my sleep's starting to get out of whack, that's not just, I don't know how to say it. It's a really strong symptom for me if I'm not sleeping appropriately. The other thing for me that I'm trying to reconcile right now is just kind of trying to wrap my head around. I'm an eccentric person. You guys know me. I'm not, you know, I Google-eyed my Crocs this week. But if I'm getting really, really busy, like, that might be something to check in. I remember Chris saying, like, oh, shit, that's right. Like, you crocheted a whole octopus one night, like, in CPE. Like, it's like, I did do that. And retrospectively, I was probably a little bit manic. If I show up to work with a crocheted uterus, like, there's probably a conversation that somebody needs to have with me.
It actually happened, though, for the record.
For real happened, yeah. And someone probably could have had a conversation with me at that point. And I think being aware of, again, someone did diagnose me as bipolar when I was 22. I told her that was bullshit and incorrect, and I threw away the script she gave me, and I never saw her again, which is a really normal response for someone when they're told that they're bipolar for the first time. Most everybody I know who's bipolar, that's their initial reaction to being told they're bipolar, because bipolar has, when people think of bipolar, they tend to think of, what are some of those movies? What's the one with the real crazy girl from the late 90s? You know what I'm talking about?
90s was a difficult decade.
What's
Girl
that?
Interrupted?
Yeah, that's. I think that's like their mindset, is that you're like totally off the chain and totally unable to function. And that's not true. There are some forms of bipolar that really do strongly interrupt your day-to-day functionality. But like anything else, there's a spectrum. This last time, I also told my psychiatrist to fuck off, but I was also really desperate for help. I knew that I wasn't well and that I couldn't control myself. So I told her, I said, I'll take this shit for 6 weeks and then I'll come back in and you'll be wrong and we will start back over. So I showed up 6 weeks later and said, I have to apologize to you. While I was in the middle of that manic episode, though, more seriously, what was really helpful to me, first of all, was having people I could talk to consistently who weren't judgmental about what was happening. I know I called Chris a couple times. I know Charles and I had lunch. I have a very dear friend who I grew up with that, God love her, I think was on the phone with me for like 6 hours a day for like 3 weeks. But I really needed concrete input about what boundaries should be. I couldn't really develop my own. Everything seems kind of like fair game when you're in that mindset. So she actually gave me some really, you know, I kept telling her, like, I can't make my own boundaries. I don't know what to do. Like, I know that I'm not behaving correctly. I know I'm really, my mind was like a freight train. Like, I couldn't even slow down my thought process enough to, like, sift through what was happening or what wasn't happening. And she said, okay, Helena, here's the deal. For the next 2 months, you're not to do anything that's not socially acceptable, and you're not to do anything that's permanent. And I went, okay. Those are really good parameters. Like, when you can't figure out what, you know, and there were times I'd check in, I'd say, I'm thinking about doing this. Is that socially acceptable? And she'd say yay or nay. She flexed with me on some things. I have a lot of really pink unicorns now that I didn't have before this happened. She decided that was pretty benign. when I proposed going and getting a giant unicorn tattoo on my thigh, she nixed that, you know. it was really helpful, though, to have concrete. So if someone's in that space, I don't know. I know my temperament, and it didn't make me angry, and I actually asked for it. But not proposing things subjectively, but being really clear and objective in not your assessment of their behavior, but your expectations of what behaviors should be happening. You know, that is not safe. That isn't, you know, mostly if it's a safety issue, but that's not safe. You know, you can do this, you can't do that. Like, not allowing for gray areas, because I could not function in gray space. Like, I could not figure it out.
Well, if getting productive and creative is one of your indicators, how concerned should we be about the sudden increase in your baking over the last 2 weeks?
That's boredom.
Okay, No,
I don't mean like, obviously, like, I like creative outlets. I'm saying, like, if I'm if I show up or whatever, if I've spent literally, you know, if I've neglected to do my work, or if I've, you know, stayed up all night working on something, like, because I have done that. I have decided that I'd rather crochet than work. I've decided I'd rather make prayer beads than work. And luckily, prayer beads could translate to work in some ways because of the type of work I'm in, but I can get really like narrowly focused and kind of put aside other things that I shouldn't. So I think it's more about balance, right? If I was like calling out of work to bake, you know, lemon meringue pie, that would be one thing, but I'm not. Sunday afternoons are my baking time. I've been pretty good about that. But that's the thing. Like I said, with hypomania, it's really hard to tell, because a lot of it is normal creative energy that I would have. It's, you know, what's attached to it and what kind of emphasis am I placing on it over my self-care.
Right. And that's why I brought it up like I did, because that's important for the people checking in, is to be able to differentiate so that you're not getting smothered.
Right.
You know, like, you know, yeah, oh my God, Helena brought over a dozen cookies. Oh my gosh, is she having... No.
Right, no.
Yeah.
No. If I brought over 100 cookies, that's happened before.
That can happen. I would let you go for one weekend.
You'd let me do that for a weekend.
I didn't know what kind of cookies.
Yeah. Well, and another interesting thing for me with this last episode that came up... Actually, you know what? I don't want to talk about that this episode. Never mind.
No, that's fine. That's part of the check-in, is that it's got to be freely shared, not coerced, and it's just a safe space.
Yeah.
And we're not trying to fix each other, just here.
No, I think we should have a conversation about some other aspects of that at another time, but I don't want to talk about it right now. I've talked about it with you guys. I just don't want to talk about it on air.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Because also, part of the check-in, and one of the things that I'm helping my wife with, is not relitigating the past.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's part of not being judgmental, is, you know, going back and attributing blame to previous things that happened. So the check-in is about, where are you now?
Right.
You know,
well, and
going forward.
Am,
so not being right. comfortable going back. Absolutely. You know,
I do think there's some things that came up in November that we might want to talk about in terms of stigma stuff at another point. I just don't want to talk about it now. And I think from part of where I am in terms of my own mental health is kind of reevaluating how I've perceived my mental health for the last 10 years in light of what is definitely a correct diagnosis, right? Because I've struggled with, like, you know, I had a psychiatrist finally tell me once, like, well, this isn't perfect, but I think this is just going to have to be good enough, right? Because we couldn't get my depression alleviated with antidepressants. We just couldn't. And being able to recognize, like, oh, that's because I don't actually need an antidepressant. I need a mood stabilizer. It's a completely different chemical issue. It was a really big deal. But also, I've been kind of reviewing my cycles and behavior for the last 15 years and being able to recognize, like, oh, that's what that was. Like, okay, that makes more sense. Like I said, I'm an eccentric person, but then there's eccentric and then there's kind of impulsive. So I guess that's the thing, is if I'm starting to behave impulsively, that's where I need to start paying better attention to what my mood's doing.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the healthiest things you can do for your own behavioral health is, you know, and it's one of the hardest things to teach when I work behavioral health psych, is mm-hmm. that you have to know you have to know yourself. Mm-hmm. You have to know where it's not like you can, you need to know like before you're on the couch petting an imaginary cat.
Right. But
what are those sort of, okay, this is not a good trend for me if I'm feeling this way this many days of the week, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not just the psychological for me. Like the first thing I notice is my physiological. It's like sleep's mm-hmm. gone. You know, if it's anxiety, my body does various things that like, okay, that's, you know, could be a UTI, could be anxiety attack, you know, just mm-hmm. knowing those things. And then you look at the other dimensions of a person, the cognitive and the spiritual, but you mm-hmm. do have to know. And that's a really hard lesson to learn personally. And it's a really hard lesson to teach folks, especially in acute psychiatric care.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, the, not the flip side, but something that I was aware of more acutely in this last episode is that not all mental health professionals are actually used to people who do that work to maintain their self-awareness, right? So I went in to see someone who'd never met me before, and I was very sick and very irritable and hadn't slept and was having some really like disturbing thought patterns. And, you know, she said, well, I think we might want to consider inpatient. And I said, I don't need inpatient. And she said, well, but I think you might need inpatient. And I said, well, except I can differentiate between ideation and intent, and I have a really good support network. And if I go inpatient, then I lose the only thing that's keeping me grounded right now, which is my people. So no. And she said, well, what's your plan? Not like a plan for hurting oneself, but like
right,
a plan
right.
for, you know, so I'll go fucking sleep on Chris's couch before I go to the fucking hole at Baptist. Like I've got, you know, but even as unwell as I was, I still had the insight of, again, like what my baseline was. I recognized I wasn't at it and I knew I needed to be working towards it. Right. So I still had that insight, which I think some people do lose. And I can see where that line is. Like I was pretty close to the edge of it, but, it was really fucking scary because, like, even at my most depressed, I've never felt that disconnected from what I think of as my baseline, like, as my actual true baseline, right? Like, I could not, I had no impulse control. That's really what it boils down to. I don't know another way to explain that. Someone said something to me, something would come up, I would have a thought, I would have an idea, and I'd have to do it, and I'd have to do it now. And I could not rein that in. Other people could rein it in for me, but I could not rein it in by myself. So for me, it's not just a matter of having self-insight. It's making sure that there are people in my life that have external insight who can check me and help me navigate those when I'm not well, which is also really upsetting because I want to do it myself. But with this one, I really couldn't.
But it still takes that strength, will, and character to realize I'm in an unsafe place.
Right. You've got to ask.
That's a tough thing to say out loud.
It is. It is. But, you know, even at my most depressed, I've been able to skate by without having to ask for help. That doesn't mean it was a good idea for me not to ask for help, but I've been able to skate by without it. With this, I needed help, and I knew I needed help. I think shit would have been really bad if I hadn't have had the support that I had. I know it would have been really bad if I didn't have the support that I had. It was fucking terrifying. I wasn't terrified at the time. I was terrified when I slowed down and I was able to recognize how out of control I'd really been in terms of my emotional stability. And well, there was no emotional stability. So shit was scary as fuck. It's really scary.
I'm mindful of a passage, one of my favorite books in my own recovery in mental health was Reynolds Price. I can't believe I'm blanking on this book. Anyway, I'll find it and add it in later as far as the citation. But he basically talks about through all the waves of life, what I really needed was, you know, somebody there in the troughs, not on the crests, mm-hmm. right in beside me.
Yeah.
I always valued that piece.
Yeah. Another thing along those same lines, like in terms of, like you were saying, Charles, checking in, another thing that I'm really in the last few months been wrestling with is that I'm a really intellectual person. I tend to approach things intellectually. My intellect is probably my most prized asset. It's what I use to get myself by in the world, and how I navigate is my ability to problem solve and think concretely and to make good decisions and to tackle problems. And I'm a very competent person. And to live for a month and a half with that just gone and to have to try to kind of reconcile, and I think I'm still reconciling in some ways what I now know that can be gone for me, right? So how do I kind of renegotiate how I perceive myself and present myself in the world in a way that is in some ways healthier for me? Because the amount of, again, not while I was sick, but the like rebound when I crashed, it was terrifying. It was really like, when I say terrifying, I mean, there was a lot of crying. There was a lot of tears. There was a lot of holy shit. Like, how do I trust myself? How do I trust my mind is what I trust. And right, I don't trust my mind like anymore. How do I navigate when what I pull on for my sense of stability in the world is no longer a stable, safe place? And for me, you know, that's had to be God. Like, that's had to be, you know, Lamictal's awesome, but you know, I could end up in a situation at any given point where I don't have access to my medication, right? That happens to people. I'll try really hard not to end up in that situation. I'm not planning on being non-compliant with this one, but I have to trust that it's not in my control, and I will still be okay no matter what the outcomes are in other respects of my life that I can't be in control. So I won't be in control. And I'm trying really hard to kind of let some of that go so that if this ever does happen as severely as it did again, that backlash isn't quite as painful. Because that was it's one thing to know that you're not in control. It's another thing to straight up not be. And I don't think that had ever happened to me in that way for that amount of time without me having some mechanism to pull on to get it to stop, right? You know, with my drinking, I stopped drinking. Like, I had a way to step in and actually begin to control, apply some control to an uncontrollable situation there. With this, that really didn't exist. You know, because Lamictal takes about a month and a half to get into your system. So that crash I had wasn't medication related. That was just the end of that manic period. And it was, it's the start of a lot of reckoning for me, I think, about who I am in the world and what I want to place my emphasis on in terms of my own well-being and what's important to me. How do I identify myself in the world and what is actually important? Because if my emphasis is on my capacity to reason and be intellectually present and agile, apparently that's not a given for me. So that's been a little bit brutal. And I'm being really hyper intellectual about it right now, and I recognize that there's some irony in that, but
I relate. It resonates, you know, like Chris was mentioning, and it's almost as if the mind and body are connected in some way.
I
recognize again, yeah, when my sleep patterns, when I'm just tired all the time, I know, you know, I'm starting down the slope, and that desire to just sleep and not get out of bed starts out as physical, and then it's pretty much just mental. I don't want to deal with anything. Mm-hmm. And then when, just what you're talking about, that the thought process, the logic, the ability to analyze what's going on is gone. And, mm-hmm. and for me, saying that your thinking in head gets fuzzy is not just a description. I mean, I can hear the buzzing, mm-hmm. that I'm encased in now, that separates me and my mind from the outside world. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is cognitive. I can hear it. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the hardest things people who deal with mental illness. And when I finally got help and got on medication, it's exactly what you're talking about, is it's not, you're not just trying to treat or deal with, or however you want to phrase it, the condition itself. It's your whole vision and concept of who you are as a human being has been upended.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's hard enough under the best of circumstances to deal with. But now it's like, oh my gosh, now I have to include this in who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that I've learned in our friendship and the three of us is we worked, I know some of the early work Chris and I did was on finding the vocabulary to do that.
Mm.
To not say, oh, I have depression. I suffer from depression, because that's still, it's external. It's not me.
Right.
It's like having a cold, right?
Right.
I can claim a finite time period that I have the cold, but it's not who I am fundamentally.
Right.
But to say I am a depressive, that is now part of who I am. And that's really hard, you know, and that's why I thought of how I crouched and set my question to you is, you know, you now have this totally new way of having to think about yourself that you're dealing with, not just the condition itself.
Right.
You know, and want to check in as much about that as anything else.
Yeah. And that's definitely of all of it. Like I said, I'm really grateful that I haven't had to play medication roulette with this. Actually, the first thing we tried seems to be working. I'm really grateful that I'm not having to go through the rigmarole with that, because I know a lot of people do. But the biggest thing for me has been this, again, like we were saying, right? Like me being creative, me getting excited about things, like all of that's normal for me. So identifying what the lines might be, what the, you know, Chris was asking about, you know, kind of warning signs or indicators for family and friends to work, like look for. I still am not totally sure in some ways. Like I know,
right.
I know if I, you know, I know if I stay up past 11, I start getting anxious, you know, cause I just, you know, I don't know what to expect. I don't know if what happened in November could happen again or not, or if that was really truly a medication exacerbation. But it has been this sense of like, not hopelessness or helplessness, but just kind of a realization that the way that I usually turn towards myself to make sense of the world is not necessarily the most valid option. My mind can get pretty, you know, I've had the depressive fuzzies. I have had that. And in some ways I've like conditioned myself to recognize what that is, and I can be patient through it. Mania, I could not be patient through. I don't know how to describe it any other way than like a freight train. Like, and I was like hanging on to the rails on the outside. Like my mind was going and I was hanging on, but I couldn't get inside. So it felt like I was going a normal speed. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember the day it stopped. I actually slept one night. I woke up in the morning and I went, oh my God. Like it was like someone had just like hit the brakes, and I was still going a little faster than normal, but I was processing like at a more typical speed. And I went, what the fuck just happened? Like it was like a bad dream. It's like a bad dream. I'm still processing, y'all. I mean, I think that's true.
It's still very raw.
Yeah. I mean, I can talk and talk and talk like I know what the fuck I'm talking about, but I really don't. I'm still really processing. I do know that it shifted my understanding of myself a lot, and that I have a different sense of responsibility with this diagnosis than I ever felt with a diagnosis of depression. I think because of the stigma attached to bipolar, that
there is a hierarchy with mental illness. Yeah, there very much so is.
Yeah, there is. And, you know, but the fact of the matter is that I'm a really successful professional, capable, independent woman who happens to also be bipolar and an alcoholic. Like, so, you know, it's not, and I don't think of it as I've been lucky. I think of it as I've had good resources. If that's lucky, then I have had good resources. But also there are ways to be well, and there's ways to garner enough self-insight to know when you need to ask for help, which was, I think, the key for me this last time, was that I'd done enough work over the last 5 years on my emotional health and my social health and my spiritual health to recognize that I needed help and I asked for it instead of trying to deal with it on my own. Because I really think if I tried to deal with it on my own, I might be dead. Like, I really, that's not pejorative. I really do think I might be dead. It got really ugly. So, you know, I guess for anyone listening, like, that would be, that's my only takeaway so far, is that whatever that self-insight is, I need to keep working on that, because that's what got me through this last time. Because as much insight went out the window, I strengthened that inner sense of self and identity enough that there was like a thread to hang on to. And that thread led me right back to the people who I knew would support and take care of me.
I think that's one of the things, like doing behavioral health chaplaincy, as persons, you know, that's living with treatment resistant clinical depression, you know, those diagnoses, is that it's the mastering of the minute, the mastering of the immediate. You know, it's such a hard lesson to learn. It's an even harder one to teach. You know, that sense of you've done psych groups where you're like, okay, let's do some goal setting. And most people are like, oh, I want to get back in good relationship with my kids, my spouse. They have these like long-term, way down the road, and it's really hard to get them to focus. Like, I want to know what you're going to do an hour after this group ends. Mm-hmm. That's going to get you there. And so it's those little decisions, mm-hmm, of what in the immediate present can I be doing or not doing, for that matter, mm-hmm, that will contribute to my overall health. And that, mm-hmm, and that's doubly hard for someone struggling with addiction, because you're essentially asking, I want you to do something now that you're really going to hate yourself for later, but even more later, you're probably going to be really glad you did it. And however long that pretty much later is going to vary from person to person. I did find the quote. It's from A Whole New Life by Reynolds Price, which is a must read for anybody that struggled with suffering, disease, or what have you. It's about his journey with, I believe it was cancer. In that deep trough, I needed companions more than prayers or potions that had worked for another. I just really liked that quote, is the sense of the greatest gift we can give people, which is incredibly hard to do in a socially distanced COVID-19 lockdown world, is to be present, mm-hmm, just to be with. You know, we talk often on here, Job's got really good friends up until the verse they start talking. Just being present is so important. Mm-hmm. And it's people want to do that. They want to have that great breakthrough. They want to have that Goodwill Hunting, Robin Williams, Matt Damon, you know, hugging scene at the end.
Though, in relationship to the COVID-19 social distance stuff, the person who I drew on the most for support and was the most available and consistent with me through all of that was my best friend, who I've known since I was 9, who lives in Ohio. So this was pre-COVID-19, but all of that support was through FaceTime, through telephone calls. We didn't see each other at all through it. She couldn't come down. I couldn't go up. So as much as in person is really wonderful, she was my point person for support through that. And she was not in my immediate space. So
Zoom has its benefits. I mean, it's not the perfect, preferred, but it's better than
nothing.
Yep.
Which actually is a good segue to additional words of wisdom, in addition to the ones that you shared with us from Reynolds Price. And this comes from...
See, Tom. I made a subtle Duke reference. Yeah. You didn't call me on it.
I do.
Okay.
We slammed Duke earlier, so for not teaching you the correct Talmud, so you wouldn't know to wipe your ass with a gas-soaked rag. But, you know, you get the education you pay for.
Feels like I should have learned that, you know, a lot earlier.
I feel like the Talmud shouldn't have to tell you to not wipe your ass with a gas-soaked rag. I feel like that should I feel like your animal instinct should have informed you that that was a bad idea.
Port in a storm. Yeah. That's all I'm going to say. Under duress.
And
I'll have to put the link to whatever episode that was.
Were you wearing fucking socks, man? Did you have socks on?
No.
Did you have a shirt?
T-shirt? No. Yeah, I did have a shirt.
Well, there you go.
Nothing more to say about that.
Where were you, assholes? Whatever. Jeez. Almost 10 years ago now? Now you tell me.
Now you know.
Now we tell you.
Hey, I share 2,500-year-old wisdom with you.
Right.
Right.
10 years too late, Charles.
Hey, it took us 40 years to cross the Sinai, right?
Right. Good things take time.
Well, now that we've blown the really good segue, I'll share the parting words of wisdom from Helen Keller. Walking with a friend in the dark is better than walking alone in the light.
Well, I'm Chris Henson, and I'm still the Gentile.
I'm Helena Epstein, and I'm still the ampersand of reason.
And I'm Charles Breton, and I'm still the Jew.
Join us on our next episode, where you can listen to a Jew and a Gentile walk into a bar mitzvah. Wishing I could change
the things that I... Special thanks to Ethan Sapphire for letting us use his song Shoulda Woulda Coulda as our theme. You can download Ethan's music at soundclick.com/Ethan Sapphire. Give back the hand if you didn't like the deal. You made your choices, you gotta live with that. If you learn from your mistakes, you'll get another chance at that.